Okay, rolling.
Welcome to Craft Beer Radio. I'm Shannon, and this is episode 532 on August 27th, 2026.
It was good.
Very good.
You should do it
all the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's... I think that was pretty good for your first attempt at trying to do the DJ thing.
And before the music goes away, listen to what a ripoff of Sweet Child of Mine is.
It very much sounds like this. When was this?
81.
81, when was Sweet Child of Mine?
85 or 86.
Oh, so Sweet Child of Mine is a ripoff of this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So, learned that the other day. And I was actually listening to Australian Crawl. That's the band. And it's pretty good. It's, you know, a little new wavy, but it holds up for stuff being done like 81. I like it. Okay. So, all right. Tonight, we are doing a couple different things. We are streaming live on our Discord. So, if you join our Discord server, you can start participating there. We'll probably take a caller later, or callers, answer some questions. It'll be a great way to get corrections and things like that. Because, or someone, you know, we get an email like 3 weeks from now that asks us about something we did on the show and we have no clue. We get that instant feedback. It might help. Let's start with that one there, the Petite Princess.
Okay. So long-time listeners who have... or people who have maybe gone back and listened may know this, but it's something that sticks out in Jeff and my mind, which is Le Petit Prince from Jester King Brewery in Texas. It is a table beer, very small beer, and we were very fascinated by how it was at like 3-something%, and it was one of the most flavorful beers we had that night.
And what's the ABV on this one?
So this one is 2.9.
Oh, wow.
So this is from Brasserie Furez in France.
Terrier.
I should have known to think French on that. But brewed in, as you say, collaboration with Jester King.
Yeah. The guys at Terrier, they're like a hotspot for collaborations. The beers they had for sale at the bottle shop, they had probably 5 different collaborations with different brewers, you know, from American brewers and stuff. And you know, we went on the trip with the brewer owner from Brewery Ardennes, and he did a collaboration that morning. So, and actually that beer getting shipped back to New York, you know, like
sometime
as we speak,
in the summer.
Like right now.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I thought it was going to be in the summer because we were going to be invited to come out.
Oh, we'll be invited to come out, but we can't go.
Why?
Because it's going to be like next week.
For real?
Yeah.
For real, dog.
Dang. I really thought it was...
No, it's on a boat right now.
I'm on a boat.
So disappointed. I was really looking forward to getting together with the gang and having that. Oh, man.
I don't know. He doesn't have a date that he's going to do the release party yet. But anyway.
Ingredients. Eau, malt d'orge, houblon, levure.
That was very good.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Water, malt, hops, yeast.
The aroma on this is, for 2.9% or 2.8% beer, you'd expect like it wouldn't dominate with big malty flavors. But the first thing I got was kind of this crackery, kind of sweet, like quick bread kind of smell.
Yeah. So table beers are essentially 2.9%. Like, I mean, it's not going to get you drunk. It's really there to be refreshing and... I would say on the level of, you know, slightly more, but it's on the level of like kombucha or something, right?
Kombucha relies a lot on the acidity to kind of give it its body.
You know? But in terms of an alcoholic drink, where does it fit on the table? And it's like, it's a table beer, meaning it's just sort of there and like even your kids could drink it. I'm sure they probably wouldn't be hurt by it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. The aromas on this, it smells super clean, fresh. You know, there's that malt flavor. The spicy hops are coming through in there as well.
Very interesting. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Le Petit Prince was made from second runnings.
I don't know. I don't remember.
So I'm curious how this one was made.
I'm pretty sure this was made as a specific beer. Does Jester King, if you're able to look this up, I'm curious if Jester King talks about the differences between Prince and Princess.
But I did find something. Let me see if I can figure out where that is. Okay, so here's something that they're talking about. Just a beer
got
news
a
from Jester
dry,
King Brewery.
Bubbly champagne type.
It's taste. Highly carbonated. I gave it some swirls around the glass mm-hmm. to kind of take down the zing some. And then, yeah, the aroma had more malt, mm-hmm. biscuit cracker aroma than it does have flavor.
Correct.
It does have a kind of more straw-like flavor to it.
Okay, in early October, we had the pleasure of visiting Brasserie
Thierry
in Esquilbac, France. Oh, and working with owner brewery Daniel Therrier to create a collaboration called La Petite Princesse Beer Table. The recipe for La Petite Princesse is the same as our own recipe for La Petite Prince. However, the malts and hops come from different suppliers. The water comes from France and the yeast was own house yeast.
All right. I was under the mistaken impression, that Prince and Princess were both beers you could get in Texas. And
no, it's only available in Europe, but it's possible the future batches will make their way to the U.S.
Gotcha. Okay.
Unfortunately, none is likely to make its way to Texas since they can't make enough beer to justify the $7,000 it would cost for them to do business in the state.
Wow.
Brasserie Terrier is this pretty small place. Their tasting room gift shop was just about as big as, you know, this room here, right? You know, it was.
Yeah, it's not very big. But
maybe 1,000 square feet, probably less. And yeah, definitely less. 800 square feet, let's call it. And then the brewery is in a post building next door. Relatively new building, but they had a lot of cask aging stuff, barrel aging stuff. And the brew house was your typical, like, 15 hectoliter, 20 barrel, something like that. Like a brew pub size system.
So in terms of flavor here, it's spicy. It's got kind of a orangey, yeasty kind of thing. It's also doesn't have much of a backbone. It's very aqueous. What the backbone is there is a very kind of light, saltine-ish cracker. Mm-hmm. I feel like Le Petit Prince had more of a malt backbone, but again, I don't really remember that well.
Yeah, it's been decade since we've had it. The aroma is better than the flavor. The aroma makes it feel like it's going to punch above its weight. Mm-hmm. And then the flavor, it's fine. But yeah, it leaves you a little bit wanting because the aroma was kind of promising a better experience. So that's an unfortunate side effect of the thing.
It's kind of got a seltzer-y thing going on, right?
It's mm-hmm. to me, I really can't get past the taste of it just being a cheap, dry champagne.
Yeah, I think that it's a cheap, dry champagne that wasn't made from grapes, mm-hmm. right? And
yeah,
so it's interesting they got flavors a lot like a champagne without having to use, you know, grapes at all and just using a very small bit of malt. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, a cheap, dry champagne is going to be, what, 14, 15%, and this is mm-hmm. 2.9. Mm-hmm. So, you know, consider that. But I do think, like, if you're thinking in terms of satisfaction, this has to be had with something to eat. I don't think that this is, you're not going to enjoy this alone.
No. You would have to.
A nice fresh salad would go well with this, something with some light fish.
I was just going to say Caesar salad.
Yeah.
And then when you said salad, I was going to say Caesar salad, but then you said fish. So
yeah,
that would go well. That fish sandwich that we had today probably go well with that.
But I think you could get essentially the same effect with a seltzer.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Yeah. The aroma, I was like, oh, if it tastes as good as it smells, I was like, this is going to be a banger. But
yeah.
Kind of disappointing.
It smells very, like it's going to be a deeper saison with with really interesting stuff. And I'm getting some of that like lingering on the back of my tongue as I breathe in and out, but it doesn't feel like it's in the flavor when you're tasting it.
And this is also a tiny 33 centiliter bottle, you know? So if this was a 750 and you were sharing it with two people, you get a more sizable thing that
right.
You might grow on you more, you know, you might get more accustomed to the minuscule flavor that's in there, or the CO2 might actually get, you know, better levels.
I think you're right, because I'm on my fourth sip of it, and that one actually tasted better.
Put some of the dregs in there and it gives me a little bit more flavor, some of the yeast.
Oh yeah.
So you get definitely some body from that.
A little bit. Shouldn't have decanted carefully. Yeah. My bad.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I would say don't decant this carefully.
Yeah.
Take advantage of that yeast in there if you're going to do it.
Yeah. Just for people listening, if they're wondering where Thierrier is, where Escobec is, it's near West Flanders. It's just across the border from where West Fletcher and St. Bernardus is and whatnot. You know, it's another 20 minutes, half hour, something like that.
Idaho, neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Let's grab that big green bottle next. So,
They're running in a particular direction, but we're not going in exactly.
No, not that direction. So this one is from Alboron, which is another brewery in France, but right on the border, southern part of Belgium, France, though. Whoa! Wow!
I taught you how to open those.
Whoa!
It's a gusher. Jesus.
He didn't listen.
Wow. That was.
You should have listened to exciting. Me.
That was.
Did you forget the trick I taught you?
I don't forget the trick. I just didn't expect.
You just didn't believe me.
Yowzas. All right. So this is a collaboration with Hill Farmstead, I believe. Pretty sure this is the one. Green bottle. So this is the what we were at. When we were at Alboron, I tried asking the brewer or the owner about green bottles and, you know, the whole Saison thing, green bottles, kind of, you know, characteristic.
This is a collaboration with Jester King.
Oh, this is Jester King too? Okay.
Oh.
They must have made the rounds like we did. All right. So I tried to ask them about the green bottles and whether light striking or skunking was kind of part of the, you know, the intention or flavor profile they consider to be an asset. And I couldn't get the translation across. I used Google Translate. Mm. I tried to describe it as light striking and not just skunking, but I also like said skunking. And he just didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And like these bottles were in their gift shop sitting horizontally in those big steel crates where they age all the beers right next to the window. So I wouldn't be surprised if this thing is severely skunked.
Yeah, I can't find much information on this other than a basic rating on Beer Advocate, but that doesn't do anything. Nothing about the information about it, other than, of course, that it is a, like I said, collaboration with Jester King. I can smell something in there.
I'm trying to figure out what that is. It almost smells like weed.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay.
That's
okay. But not skunk weed. It smells like good quality weed.
Yeah, so this is the Saison. You said, well, you got the translation of the name.
Yeah, noblesse oblige, or noblesse oblige. The inferred responsibility of privileged people to act with generosity and nobility towards those less privileged. And as we were saying before the show, if only, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's definitely some sulfury thing happening here, right? Those smells you're getting, whether it's good weed, bad weed, those are mercaptans. Those are sulfur aromatic compounds that form when light hits hopped beer, isomerized hops, which are hops that have been boiled, changes their configuration, their molecular configuration slightly. And the light is enough energy to sort of cleave off a bit. And then there's other sulfur compounds going in there and they'll just mix together and they'll turn into these volatiles that the primary one is isoprenyl mercaptan. And it is very similar to skunks, stuff that comes out of skunks and that aroma. And it's very, very detectable, like as low as 5 parts per billion, I think.
All right, so I moved on to the flavor since the aroma was a little closed off, and
can I have a little more to maybe
you can have a little more,
get some of that foam down. It's not going to.
It doesn't taste very skunky, so that's nice. No. It has a nice rustic saison flavor. It's kind of clean and light in the spectrum of saisons, but it's also intensely hopped. Like it tastes like an intense imperial noble hopping kind of thing. Like there's so much noble hops.
There is a really good amount of hops here. I totally agree with you. I do think that it's weirdly not impacting the front flavor very much. It's more of the just the sort of surrounding
and
stuff.
It sits on the back.
The bitterness
at the back. It's like, oh, those are like Hallertau, like all Hallertau all day.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's. Yes. Yeah, that very continental, noble hop. The Zots, you know, the stuff that you're familiar with Pilsners and things like that.
Yeah.
It says 4.2%. There's a 4.2 on the bottles.
So. That sounds about right.
I really like this. I mean, for being a 4.2, it's bursting with flavor. The CO2 on this one is enhancing the beer versus washing it out.
4.7.
Maybe
it's 4.2. Yeah, 4.7.
Oh, that's 7. Okay. It's kind of shaded over here. So missed it. I'm enjoying this one quite a bit.
This is apparently brewed with a small amount of honey.
That's what I'm tasting.
That, when I say that, yeah, as soon as I say that, it sort of makes sense. But this is also classified as a beer guard. So that's a...
In that part of the world, there's little distinction between bearded guards and saisons.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned that being there. I didn't know that in advance. But yeah, they pretty much just, if you're on the French side, it's a bearded guard. If you're on the Belgian side, it's a saison, but it's not really a different beer.
Mm-mm. This is really good.
But at the beginning, I did say it's kind of cleaner, right? So, I mean, that does kind of align with what you traditionally think of bearded guard. But this one also has, you know, I've never had a bearded guard that's imperially hopped, you know.
I mean, a bearded guard is supposed to have more malt than this. Yes,
they do normally.
Right? So the bearded guard is beer for storage, beer for...
Yeah, the keeping.
Keeping, yeah. So I typically expect a bearded guard to be more malty.
Yep, this is from Alberon and Jester King, the noblius oblige.
Baba Booey.
Oh.
Just wanted to see if this soundboard was connected.
You're still on.
Yeah.
I got you. Went to my second closest brewery to where I live now, called Coal Run Craft. And not great. Not
the second closest brewery to here?
Here.
Yeah, to here.
Yeah, not great. The best part was they had a description of their stout. And it's like a dry Irish stout. Without coffee flavor. So the first time I've ever seen a beer description that told you what wasn't in the beer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't expect coffee flavor in it.
Exactly.
Irish style.
Exactly.
But so, maybe so, whoever wrote it expects, you know, they were saying this is an Irish stout versus an American stout.
Yeah, they're sort of trying to say, don't expect coffee flavors.
Yeah, it just for the description, it was a decision that was made.
It was funny.
But the place wasn't good. The first beer that I had, or Shannon tried their hazy IPA. That thing needed to be introduced to the drain. It had, tastes like pool floats and Band-Aids.
It was bad.
And then had a Belgian single that I don't know what the flaw was in it because it tasted like it was like half wine, half beer, like a white wine and beer. Like it, but it didn't taste wrong. It just tasted like a wine beer mix.
And I said it tasted like a
mead or something.
A mead, yeah. I really thought it tasted like a mead. I didn't think it tasted bad, but it didn't taste anything like what it should have tasted.
There was something wrong with it, but I don't know what was wrong with it. And it didn't ruin the beer. It just changed the beer.
Completely changed it.
And then I had their winter warmer, which... It was a little off, too. I could just chalk that one up to whatever your average dirty tap line funk is.
Yeah, I was thinking, when was the last time they cleaned their lines? Because that's something that, especially a bar out here, who knows?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just one of those places, no rush to go back to.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a whole lot of options out here unless we want to drive really far and go to the city.
30 minutes. Yeah, it was 30 minutes. Yep. Okay. So that was the Albaron.
Can I suggest where we should go next?
What's that?
Guess where we should go next?
Yeah, it's just away. This one. That one.
Yeah, because I don't want it to be like, oh, we save it for the end. Okay. I want to use it as a comparison. All right,
the only thing I want to say is this is supposed to be like the same formula.
Yeah, I know.
I'd rather go there too.
No. I want to do this one first so we get like, right. so we're not, okay. So.
Okay.
Because I want to avoid that sort of last bias. I got to finish bias, this first. You know, the,
I have to finish
the bias of the,
okay,
of the end.
Okay, start drinking.
I've been drinking. I had a lot in my glass.
If you're wondering, the beer that we're talking about is beer we've had before on the show. I don't think Shannon's ever had it, though.
No. Well, I've had it.
Oh, you've had it.
I had it.
Okay.
In Belgium.
Now on the show, this is West Lothian 12. The famous, at one point, many people considered the best beer in the world. I think I've talked about this before. I feel like it rises to the top sort of out of the fact that it's just really good. And kind of there's no one who's going to taste and be like, oh, that's bad. And so. That's how it gets there.
Yeah, like, that's exactly how we described it before. The tour was supposed to stop at the Inderveld Cafe across the street, but they were on winter holiday, so that we couldn't go and stock up on it like the plan was. So a lot of people on the trip were really like hunting this whale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went to certain places and paid top price at bottle shops or whatnot.
If they found it.
And we went, I organized a tasting at a lambic blending place who doesn't do their own brewing, but they buy either finished or unfinished lambic and do their blending.
Yeah. I could pause you here. I'm pretty sure you told this exact story last episode, okay. But I just wanted to.
All right. I'll stop then. Anyway, it was there. So thank you. If you heard the story, then I told it.
Okay. So in terms of the beer, this is, of course, I think we probably classify it as a quadruple. Mm-hmm. 10.2% alcohol by volume. Ingredients are water, barley, sugar, candy syrup, yeast, and hops. I think traditionally Belgian beers, in case you're wondering, they use an extra like sugar syrup when they're brewing particularly beers of this nature.
Mm-hmm.
0 grams of fat. So 0 grams of saturated fat. It's funny. They have all the descriptions here. And you can tell you how much salt is in here. So in the 330 milliliter, which I think is what this bottle is, there is 0.11 grams of salt. So not a lot.
Alrighty.
Ooh, so right out of the box, big like mapley, bready aroma. And now some of the Belgian candy is coming through. Like the first thing I thought was kind of mapley. Now it's like, okay, now I'm selling some of the Belgian-y candy aroma.
Yeah. My first aroma was almost a little fusely. I'm trying to chase that down, but.
We've had at least one where we've poured it out.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we've had one where we're just like, no, this is ruined. So it happens. But this doesn't smell like that one smelled at all.
Oh, yeah. This one doesn't smell like it's ruined, but I keep getting a couple notes here and there. And
sorry, I'm back.
There's a note that makes me think oxidized.
Could be. I'm getting, in addition to like the candy aromas, I'm getting a little like banana peel.
Yeah, I don't think you're off there.
For a second, I thought I saw varnish. But no,
that's the fusel alcohol.
Yeah, it's the fusel. No, yeah, no. We think this beer is not
slightly ruined.
Really?
Yeah, not at. Another reason why I didn't want to make, you know, we don't know
right
what level this is at, so we don't. So saving it for last seemed like setting us up for problems.
So I am right when I say varnish.
I mean, yeah, definitely, absolutely. Yeah, it's in there. I think it will go away.
Okay. Should we warm this one?
Yeah. It's a little bit in the flavor. It's kind of hot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it doesn't have the big body.
Yeah. No, this is
not the best beer in the world.
No, this has problems.
Well, when we had it in Belgium, I wasn't impressed with it then either.
Where did we have it?
At the Brewers Guild.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. It was better there.
I haven't tasted this yet, but I can say that I was just like, oh, well, okay. I'm really not sure why there's so much hype about it, but.
Because it was ranked really high on a couple beer websites for a decade.
Yeah. No, like there are plenty of beers I've had that are better in my mind than West Lettering 12, even at its prime. But I just think it's when it's good, when it's in good shape, it's a pretty unobjectionable beer. You're going to enjoy it no matter what, when it's in the best shape, when it's fresh.
The one we had at the Brewers Guild was what it should have been. You know, it had a fuller body than this. It was big and candy, you know, dark candies and malty. This one has, the body is kind of sliced right. It's almost like a candied apple. Like there's a body gets sliced through with that fusel-y note, and there's a little infection in there or something, but it really comes across kind of like a candy apple, where you get that tart acidity from the apple.
You can taste some of what's there, but it doesn't. It's not allowed to be full. It's not allowed enough to fill the wholeness of the flavor. And there's just, there's that band-aidiness, like it's just being, like someone stored this in rubber for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. Like the bottle was made out of rubber.
Mm-hmm.
Tastes more like things I expect to get from, you know, like Belgian imports back in the day at the Sharp Edge.
Yes.
You know, like a Golden Drock or something
like that. Right, right, right.
It tastes like old Golden Drock. I am getting more used to this. It's less objectionable, but the beer is still flawed.
Very much so, yeah. No, I would not go out and say, hey, you have to try this to somebody. I would just be like, no. And I'm wondering whether it's really worth my sobriety.
And what's the ABV on it?
10.2.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if, Jeff, if you really want to save it, you can probably have the rest of mine.
Yeah. Put it in a glass.
It's not great.
No, it really...
it's not great.
You know, if I'm going to put my sobriety into something, then you have a lot of really good alcohol here. So if you would like to, so we missed your all right there entirely. So
all right.
I'm just pointing out that we're still getting.
Wasn't on mic.
But still.
You don't want to pick up the whole room. We want to pick up the person.
I think the part of the problem is that way back when the studio had a bunch of stuff to dampen reflections from walls. Yeah. So it was easier to sort of keep the volumes up and keep the pickup high.
Mm-hmm.
And in the situation we're in right now, everything is sort of makeshift. So it's harder to, you know, to do that. So we're just sort of having to adapt.
All right. Well, let's compare that to its bastard child, the St. Bernard is 12. Oh, this one's a gusher. No, that's a good sign.
You need a towel?
Yeah, probably. The St. Bernardus gift shop didn't do a great job of protecting their gift shop beers from the sun. Like, it hurt me watching the sun blaze in across all the bottles. Bottles are hella cheap, though. It was like €1.40 for most of their beers. I think this one was a little bit more, but...
Well, you know what they say. You get what you pay for, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, the beers at Bar Bernard were
were fantastic, yeah. But we weren't drinking the ones from the gift shop.
So as you said, this is the bastard brother because this is, as you said, the same recipe, right?
Well, it's supposed to be as close as they can get, or as close to what St. Bernard is brewed as West Velletrin back when they brewed West Velletrin.
10%. Alcohol by volume.
All right. First up, super zingy on the nose.
Normally there are real information on this one. Yeah, very zingy.
It smells just like carbonic, you know, like burns your nose kind of. The CO2 smell.
Which normally to me is also a sign of oxidation. If it was just smelling like that.
Yeah, so I'm working on a bunch of the foam. I mean, it was a gusher. So yeah, it could be a little.
I'm going to sit this one in my hands for a while.
Yeah, it's weird because with all that carbonic stuff, you're not getting a whole lot of other volatile stuff in it. Mm-hmm. You should be. Like, I mean, something like this should be fragrant as hell. So, unfortunately, the story of the beers so far from that you've brought back has been...
Nothing compared to our trip and the beers we had on tap.
It's like the beers that were brought back are disappointing compared to what I'm sure you had on... You know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the drinking beer there... was almost like it was reinvigorating. Mm-hmm. It's like, or especially for Belgian beer, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, like everything was a banger after banger. It wasn't just because we were euphoric because of the thing. The beer was objectively good.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think I even posted that on Discord that I've officially changed. You know, I have always been an IPA girl, you know, give me an IPA. And I'm like, no, I want a Belgian, you know, Belgian style beer.
I think
all the time. And I'm bringing these back, you know. I mean, there, I was like, yeah, Belgian beer is absolutely, there's nothing like it. There's no comparison. It's great.
It reminds me of the old days of the podcast and before then, when any beer you get is probably going to be old. Mm-hmm. Like the thing about today with IPAs and stuff like that, you're going to get new stuff on the shelves really easily. And you're going to get fresh beer. And
if you're lucky.
Fresh is the way to drink beer. So you were drinking super fresh stuff out there.
Yeah,
right. So it was really tasty. Yeah. There's not a lot of places around here that are brewing very fresh Belgian beer. So it's hard to get that. And I think what we're seeing is the consequences of not having fresh beer when compared to sort of our typical understanding of beer, which is super fresh and we get it right away.
So I've been tasting this St. Bernard as 12, and it's good news. It's not off. I mean, it's hella carbonated, but
no, it tastes like it did when we were there.
Yeah, it has, good body to it. Kind of prunes, plums, a little bit of,
cinnamon. Cinnamon or allspice notes, something similar to that.
Yeah, this beer beats this bottle beats that bottle. Oh, hands
down. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down. And, the prevailing wisdom is that, the St. Bernardus is kind of like a 7 on the volume level if the Westie's a 10, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where, not today.
No.
Well, it just goes to show you that if you can get, it matters the state of the beer. Mm-hmm. And the name on there ain't going to do it for you if the beer is ruined or the beer is in some way been hurt.
Now the question is, do I keep the other bottle of Westie or do I sell it?
Well, here's the question that raises is, do you feel comfortable selling it?
I'm just selling the bottle. The internal stuff is incidental.
See, that feels like, to me,
the Eternal Earthbound Pets all over.
Yes,
again.
Exactly. It's that whole, it's grifter energy.
Yeah.
I agree.
I heard stories of several people who pay for their entire trip by bringing back like a case of Westie and just selling it on the black market. Mm-hmm. So it's a thing people do. Key there is just not the tasted, so you don't know that it's fucked.
I mean, exactly. That is certainly not very noblesse oblige.
No, it's not. I'm still psyched about that beer. This one's great. Really good. Oh yeah, this one's really good too. There's no complaints. This one's clean.
Yeah, no.
I'm happy because the other beer that we had from, we bought a couple 4-packs, right? And we had,
the 6 on the show, right?
This 4-pack, like on the way to the airport. Tasted fine. Then we had the 6 last week. That one tasted off, right?
Last show.
Yeah. Tasted off. Then it was like, part of me is like, do miles matter? Like, even if you drink it the next day, do miles matter?
Being on the plane, it's the pressure.
They're pressurized, so I don't think that would matter.
I hope not, but.
I feel like There's some luck of the draw here. Yeah. So it does raise a question whether your Westie is, the other Westie might be okay.
It was in the same case, sitting on the same floor.
Well, so are.
I'm surprised that Elberon and the not even that dark green bottle with the pale beer wasn't skunked to high heaven.
Yeah.
That made me happy.
Yeah, no, like there was definitely some there. But it wasn't apparent in the taste. It was only in the aroma, which is where you're going to detect that anyway for the most part. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really impact the flavor, which is good. And, but so far, this ABT 12 is I think, the beer that is the most satisfying.
Yeah, certainly is.
Tonight.
Good job, St. Bernardus.
Yeah. You did it!
All right. Well, we're finishing up the beer. Let's go to the IPA next, and then we'll save the sour for last. Okay. All right. So all the beers that we're doing tonight are from Belgium, except for this one. When we got back, we stopped at Origine Brass, a brew pub in Montreal. I picked up a couple cans. We did one last week that went over pretty well. This is the other one. This is
last show.
Everyone knows what I mean.
Well, and he did say all the other ones were from Belgium, and they weren't because we had some from France. From the Belgium trip. This is from the Belgium trip, too.
You are full
of lies. Montreal is part of the Belgium trip.
Full of lies.
Beware, Jeff.
Words are
sorry,
hard.
Honey.
Words are hard. All right. This one's in a pounder can.
North America.
Sons of Mosaic.
I was really enjoying this, and I didn't want to have to
get the second
guzzle it.
You want a second glass?
I just have a little bit left, but
so this is from Micro Recipe for Origins, 7%. Their second DDH IPA,
double dry hopped
IPA of their artist series. They're talking about the picture on there now. Sons of Mosaic. They have somebody looks like a pig driving a riding a motorcycle. So
the cat,
like
pink cat,
pink cat. Okay, so I saw the
you're
pink
halfway,
and I,
you were
and
halfway
I thought,
there, yeah.
Pig. But a pink cat riding a motorcycle. It really it's a dude with a pink cat head.
Yeah.
Because it's other than that, it's a human body.
Yeah.
It's not a cat body.
I need to look at the can.
But anyway, it's Sons of Anarchy.
And
it's
he's wearing a sunglasses.
Yeah, playing off the Sons of Anarchy TV show.
I enjoyed that show.
Did you?
I enjoyed it until it got a little long winded.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a biker gang, right? Like,
I know, but I don't know. I enjoyed.
By the way, we should talk about Pluribus in the
show. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Talk about Pluribus and Push Show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
No. I like this can.
So I mentioned earlier that we're streaming live over Discord, and I'm just going to say this to Greg now that after this beer, we'll take a caller. So just get ready. You know, I didn't want to like jump on him when he's not ready. You know, he might be, you know, eating popcorn or something. So get ready. Start preparing yourself. All right.
So.
Okay, so that smells what different.
What's the ABV? I have the can in front of me. 7%. Oh, 7%. That's good.
It has a big tropical fruit flavor. Which tropical fruit is it?
That's the question.
It's not readily apparent to me.
It smells
guava-ish to me.
Kind of. Mango is the stereotypical mosaic, but I don't know if it's really coming across like mango.
No, I think it's mango.
Okay. I'm going to have to bring out one of the surprise ingredients here.
I'm picking up mango.
Because I'm not sure.
Peach?
There's definitely peach, especially when you take a sip. It's almost like my first taste
peaches.
It's almost like a peach schnapps, actually. Kumquats.
Oh, kumquats. From the kumquat capital.
Oh,
yeah. Dade City is the kumquat capital. I've been to the kumquat festival at Dade City where I've had kumquat.
Okay, I've never had kumquats, so.
You should come to Florida with us. We'll be there. Oh, no, we're missing the kumquat festival.
Missing strawberry festival, missing the kumquat festival.
That's okay, because you know what? That means we're going to be able to hit the really awesome fruit stand in Plant City that's right outside of where the strawberry festival is. Mm-hmm. And we have not been able to do that before because of the crowds. So we'll be able to bring back, name the fruits that if you want fresh strawberries, blueberries, or anything like that.
Yes, yes.
We will pick them up
absolutely.
On the way back.
All of them.
We will be hitting up the Hillshire Farm.
Now, you know how much I love you guys, right?
No, tell me.
Needy.
A lot. You also know how much I hate Florida, right?
Uh-huh. Do you know how much I hate Florida? I go there because my family's there.
It's going to be really hard for you to convince me to go down to Florida. As
no.
much as
We're not going to vacation in Florida. We go because my family is there. And that is the only reason.
Okay, so these get peeled, right?
Yeah, they get peeled.
These are like little...
They're like the size of large grapes. Yeah. And they taste like shit.
Peeling it, the zest was like very aromatic and good. Yeah. I know they're tartan as hell, but peeling it smelled great.
I don't want to mess up my... I'm sorry. I got to drink my beer first. I'm not going to...
Your seeds...
Yes, there are. We need a bowl. Jeff, can you get a bowl?
Dump bucket right there.
Oh, yeah. Dump bucket.
So, yeah, that okay, so it's sour, mm-hmm. but yeah, more like an orange. Not like,
but it gets sweet at the end. Or there's a sweet side to it or something, because I got the best part at the very end.
Of the kumquat?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Now.
But now the bitterness is building and building, and it's tart as fuck.
Do you remember when you went to the kumquat festival and... So Tyler's friend has that sherbet.
Yeah, right? Kumquat ice cream.
And the kumquat yeah. ice cream, yeah.
That was good.
Was it ice cream or was it sherbet?
I don't remember.
I think it was sherbet. Maybe it was ice cream.
So I'm thinking about taking these and just juicing them and using them for like cocktails. Because that seems to be like about the best I could do. Because I mean, there's not a lot of fruit flesh. There's a lot of fiber in there. The flavor is nice and tart, which I could use either in cocktails or like you could use that to dress a salad or something like that.
Yeah, it could be fun to use instead of limes in like a paper plane with that instead of lime juice could be interesting. I think that kind of candying them would be good.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Candying them I think would be real good.
Yeah, you could store these in like a sugar thing and just let them sit. Mm-hmm. The way that you would do like candied lemons or something like that. So so ultimately you, the peel becomes just part of it. That, but then you still have the seeds. And the seeds are a lot. Yeah. Like the seeds are big.
They are a lot.
Half the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally the size of a large grape and the seeds are half of it.
The seeds are like the size of an orange seed. So
you need to get the watermelon people on it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, that's true. Like when we were kids, watermelons had plenty of seeds. Now like a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you the seeds are coming back, just like the Polaroid cameras.
Well, I mean, I think that... So, one question is, are watermelons true to fruit or true to plant or whatever it is called when the fruit... You plant the seed and you get the same fruit? Or is it one of those things where it's like apples where you have to clone it in order to make
I think the seedless watermelons are probably a cloned lineage that doesn't produce valuable seeds.
Oh, I'm sure they're a cloned lineage. I mean, they're seedless. I mean, but I'm wondering if like, you know, there are some seeds that occasionally come in there. Probably most of them are non-viable. But if you manage to find one with seed, like could you plant watermelon seeds and get decent watermelon, or is it just going to be a crapshoot? Like,
I see what you're saying. No, you can plant watermelons. I mean, I don't know if you can plant the seeds in your grocery store watermelon.
Right.
But your grocery store watermelon are the seedless kind now. You'd have to buy an artisanal watermelon to get the seeds, and those are probably good.
And if you got those seeds, you could plant them and get the same quality, probably. In theory?
Or you can just buy watermelon seeds.
Yeah.
Which would be way cheaper. Way less effort. Oh, I got buzz blossom seeds.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
All right, cool. Got them. Yeah, so I'm going to get those planted here soon.
I still have that buzz sugar.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
That's great.
All right. Well, we told Greg McGill that we'd be bringing him in. Greg, you get there?
Well, hold on.
I see him talking, but I don't hear him. Oh, I turned up the wrong one. No, I didn't. What am I doing wrong?
Technical difficulties.
Bear with us, Greg.
I turned down this so I wouldn't hear other computer sounds. Try now, Greg.
Okay, how's that?
Yay!
So what did we get wrong? Right. Any corrections and omissions?
No, well, I was just thinking about watermelons, to be honest, and the fact that you guys can say kumquat with a straight face. then I've just been Googling kumquats. I've never had one, and they're not a thing here. You can, apparently you can find them, but I've never seen one, so...
Oh, they're not really a thing here either. To.
No.
Yeah, that's why I bought them is because...
They're really... Just in Dade City, Florida.
Yeah. The reason why I bought it was like, oh, I've never seen these before. Specific. And I was like, wow, okay, let's grab them. And they weren't that expensive, like $4 for this little...
Yeah, I've just found a nursery that's nearby that grows them. So I'm going to have to... When I can walk again, I'm going to have to go on a mission and see if I can find
them. You could make a kumquat beer. It's going to be bitter as fuck.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, Greg McGill is owner... of a brewery in Hamilton, New Zealand called Bureaucracy. I don't know. How do the Kiwis pronounce your brewery?
The same way you do, pretty much. Bureaucracy.
There.
If only we had a bureaucracy here.
I know, right?
And Greg's been a longtime fan of the show. He's actually been on the show. He came to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania before and sat in on a show, him and his wife, Alex. And
we got drunk and played a lot of, what was it? Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fun. Wow.
It was, I think it was the longest post show you guys have ever done.
Challenge accepted.
And then we also hung out karaoke nights.
We also hung out in Philly when you were out there for the CBC the 1 year. So I've seen you a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
When are you coming back?
It was like every 2 years.
Well, it was going to be this year, but I couldn't justify it. It's in, it's the other side of the state from you guys. It's in Pittsburgh. Not Pittsburgh, sorry. It's in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
The Craft Brewers Conference.
Yeah.
I was really keen to go, but, well, firstly, I just looked at the numbers and couldn't really justify it. And then, broke my ankle, so that kind of put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hopefully you'll get to come back and I get to have you on the show.
Greg judges at the CBC.
Oh, I'll be back.
And you do GABF judging too or no?
Yeah, well, I'm actually not sure anymore. I haven't been invited for a while now. Oh, okay. I think it's a good thing. Last time I was there, well, the first few times I was judging, everybody in the room looked like me. And the last time I judged, I was very much in the minority. So I think they've been going, you know, pushing the diversification thing really hard, which I think is great for beer. And, you know, so when I'm not invited, I'm going, like, good, that's that's going in the right direction.
Awesome.
I mean, this country is sliding back into white people only land, so
we'll welcome you back soon.
If it makes you feel better, I don't think the Brewers Association is. So I think they're on the right side of history, so everything should be okay there.
Well, let's hope.
All right. Anything else that you've heard so far that you would like to comment on before we move on to the...
Only that I want to know how the hell you've heard of Aussie Crawl.
Oh, I was listening to, there's a guy that does YouTube stuff called Pat Finnerty. He's in Philly and he does a YouTube series called What Makes This Song Stink.
You should definitely listen to it.
And he does these hilarious like deep dives and just his comedic style is so good on like shitty songs, like, especially train songs and things like that.
And Kid Rock
and whatnot. Anyway, we were watching one of his like live streams and someone basically said, hey, this is a ripoff of Sweet Child of Mine's a ripoff of this. And like it turned him onto it. And then I would listen to it. And then, you know, after that, I started listening to more Aussie Crawl and I dig it. It's good sound.
Yeah, we used to, my old band used to cover Boys Light Up and Reckless, which are their two sort of arguably their biggest hits, I guess. But yeah, I must have listened to Unpublished Critics a million times and never noticed that,
really?
That overlap with Sweet Child.
Never noticed that. I was primed to hear it, I guess. But
yeah,
like,
you
it
were
sounds...
primed. If you're primed, it's very different.
As soon as
different.
I heard it, I was like, this sounds really familiar.
Yeah, maybe it's just me. It didn't ever click.
I played it in my group of like work friends. And I'm like, what does this, you know, like... I primed them that it sounds like something, but I didn't prime them on what it sounds like, and they all got it like immediately. Yeah. But
I'll never be able to not hear it now. Thanks.
Sorry.
Blame Axl Rose.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't.
Hey,
Axl.
Oh, yeah. One last thing. One last thing was the quality of the Westie. We had exactly the same experience when we came back from Belgium. Alex and I brought, I think we bought a couple of bottles of each of the main three. And the only one that really held up was the six. And that tasted amazing. We had that for our, the next year's wedding anniversary. So it had kind of... That was really something special, but the 12 was so disappointing when we got it home. It didn't taste like the magic that it tasted there. So I'm 100% with you when you're saying that, you know, you're drinking them there and they just taste like liquid gold, and then you bring them back and they don't. So there is something in that travel thing. I don't know what, but there definitely is.
I thought that I was going to be golden, right? Because like we're going to buy these beers, the beers that would taste good if I opened it right now. I'm going to fly it home and treat it well. And it's not going to sit at an importer for forever. And we'll have these amazing beers to do on the show. And they, like Greg said, they are not amazing Greg. So,
you know, I mean, age matters. Yeah.
Grift them, man.
That just means we have to drink more when we're in Belgium.
Okay, question for you, Greg. So you know, I'm not good at accents, but one of the podcasts I listened to, one of the people was talking about how your accents are all about finding a word, because it's all about sort of how you move your mouth into words.
Yeah.
And he said the word for New Zealand accent is, I'm going to try to get this right, Laserdisc.
Ah, well, that's a good one.
Laserdisc.
Laserdisc. That's almost, I find myself doing it more Australian when I do it. Like,
it was Australian too, so it could. Yeah. It was one of the two.
Let's hear you say it, Greg.
Yeah.
Laserdisc.
Well, I'll do it how I normally say it. So Laserdisc.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
And then if I was going to, you know, as soon as you said it, I wanted to say like Laserdisc, which is very Australian.
Okay, Australian. Okay, so that's what it was.
But especially Melbourne, Australia, and New Zealand are very similar.
Yeah, if I hear an
actor from Melbourne, I'm like, oh, is that a Kiwi or is that Australian? But, you know, the regions are very different. And I end up speaking in an American accent when I'm over there anyway, because nobody can understand me otherwise.
Well, I'm a chameleon. Wherever I go, I tend to just start
doing the local accent.
Like, yeah, me too.
I think it's an empathy thing. I did, like, the craziest thing is when I went to India long, long time ago, where I started like imitating the Indian accent to have empathy with the people I'm talking to, where it just was.
I think it's just a natural thing. When you're immersed in it, you sort of start to talk in that way.
Yeah. If you start doing the head nod thing, you'll probably get in trouble. But everything else.
Oh, that was this is just going to turn into the whole post show here, talking to Greg. We'll put you back in the post show. But I was teaching. So I went for work and I was teaching a room full of Indian people about this thing I was working on. And I was asking them, you know, checking in, making sure I got their understanding. And they all give me their affirmative head nod, which is this.
Oh, yeah.
Which looks like a no thing. To a North American. And it was so.
Or an I don't know.
It was so disorienting because they're all like, yeah, we get what you're saying. But like the feedback they're giving me is telling me they don't get what they're saying, you know, like to me, you know. So.
There's a really high population of Indians in New Zealand, so we're well used to it. But you guys might
interesting because with the Indians who I work with, there's a whole team that I'm in charge of, and they don't do that.
Yeah, I'm hard pressed to think of seeing it here in North America.
No, they're in India.
Oh, okay.
So maybe it's just like.
Yeah, I don't know if it's regional or not. Yeah. I mean, people that I was most familiar with are Bangalore, but I've never seen a Indian who's working here do it to me that I can think of. But anyway.
I've definitely worked with people who work here. But yeah, no, this is a team that's actually in India. And they are, I haven't noticed that. Then again, they don't get onto video nearly as much as we do.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm fine with. It's like 9 p.m. when we talk to them at their time. And so it's like,
they're probably at home.
Yeah. And, I think that the times, there are a couple times when I've stayed up to like 1 a.m. our time because it was like 10 a.m. their time when we had to do something. And so like, I think it was more likely to see them on video that time. But again, they didn't do it that often. I just think it's just not part of their culture. Or at least wasn't maybe, I don't know, maybe it's more of a simple view culture versus the other company that got us. There's a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of post-show information here.
Yeah. Well, Shannon's in the restroom, so we'll just kind of ride this one out. But yeah, there's like different sites. Like the Redmond culture is to not have cameras on, where our culture is to have cameras on.
Yeah.
So it just changes. But then different meetings have different cultures too. Like, I was in a meeting where I expected cameras to be off, so I turned my camera off and realized I was the only one with the camera off, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, Greg, great talking to you. If you're going to be around later, we'll turn you back on in the post show. But
you can listen to us taste some very strange things.
All right. Our final beer is my bucket list brewery, the thing that sold me on the trip, made me so happy to go. We got Cantillon. Giza here.
You were sold on the trip before you learned of that.
The first time I had this
Cantillon, were you? Or no?
No. Oh, I learned about Cantillon at the same time I learned about the trip.
Oh, okay.
The first time I had this was in Japan. And I remember convincing somebody else to go in with me and drinking, being like, okay, I like this, but this is a lot like vinegar. And I don't know if the other person's going to like this a lot. It's very acetic, as I remember. So, you know, particularly strong and tart, but clean and crisp as well. So, like, the opposite of a Goza sour, right? Mm. Where it has real lactic and, you know, salt like that.
Yep.
This is, like, classic, simple, acetic sour.
There's one problem with this.
And that is?
We do not have the basket.
Yep. The serving basket. You're supposed to have a basket that keeps it laid over so you don't stir up the sediment.
I see. Well, that ain't going to happen.
I have to get my basket weaving merit badge skills out and weave a lambic basket.
There's a picture of somebody on Untapped having this with a classic pepper, which is a pepper and cream sauce pasta, which
looks good.
Probably would taste really great with this.
Probably.
All right. So aguz is a specific kind of lambic. It's a blend of 1, 2, and 3 year lambic. Just out of tradition, that's why they do it. 3 year lambic isn't always the best lambic, we learned on the tour. A lambic that gets good in 1 year is probably the best lambic. Mm. A lambic that takes 3 years to get good probably isn't the best lambic. But out of tradition, they brew some portion of 1, 2, and 3 year together, and that's what aguz is.
Well, it smells acetic. It doesn't smell like vinegar because there's a malt backbone here.
Yeah. It's kind of a kombucha type.
Yes. So, yeah.
Not so much acetic. There's a more, I mean, there's some lactic in there. I mean, there's definitely the horsey thing, right? Like it has this kind of barn kind of feel, like horsey, like horse blanket, like where it smells a little funky, a little cheese rindy.
Funky. Yeah. I wonder if there's bread
in there.
Some
funk in it.
Oh, it's definitely bread in there. And other things, PDO and.
Yeah, so it's all kinds of wild.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's spontaneously fermented, right? They brew. How many brew days a year did they say they do there?
Oh, shoot.
60?
It feels like it's been forever 90? Since we were on that tour.
60 to 90 brew days a year. They can only brew in like the fall and winter.
Yeah, it's such a short period of time.
This is a blend, right?
What's that?
You're saying this is a blend.
It's three different lambics, but it's no fruit or anything.
It's so good.
Isn't it? This is the...
It is so good. It
I know where this rates.
So well done. It's not the acidity that I remembered back then. It's sour, yeah, but not super sour.
No.
And it's almost got a melody to it. It's... Like it's got this, I don't know, this chorus, this choral thing.
I think I fucked up by bringing any other beer home other than Cantillon.
Well,
next time?
It's all Cantillon. All Cantillon.
All of those, that part, you know, the barnyard, the dustiness, but the acetic, the lactic, the bready part, they're all singing together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to describe it.
The aroma is way more.
They're singing together. Funky. Yeah. It's like an orchestra playing in your mouth.
The aroma to me is way more funky than the flavor. Like I'm not getting any kind of horse blanket in the flavor. That's aroma. Flavor is more of these kind of tart fruit kind of flavors. A little bit like apricot and some kumquat maybe, but some grapes. So.
Super full bodied. Mm-hmm. So you don't feel like you're missing anything.
And it's not especially tart or anything like that.
Ridiculously tart or overpowering.
It's just a perfect blend of all those flavors singing together in chorus.
Mm-hmm.
On to my third sip or so, I'm starting to get a little more of the Brett. You know, it's a little leathery, like a dusty leather kind of flavor coming through. A little darker, almost tobacco, but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
What's the ABV on this
5.
One?
Yeah.
5%.
All day, every day.
Yeah, I mean, like...
That's why you moved to Brussels, to do shit like this.
That's why we're moving to Brussels.
This is also a green bottle.
Yeah.
No, Jude, this is not... Yeah, well, it's darker.
They take
green.
Very...
It's way darker.
So I will tell you where they store these. It's in a dark hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Underground, in a dark hallway. Remember?
Yeah.
We had to walk right through it. They're stacked on either side of a concrete or a brick wall, concrete block walls underground. So There's no light getting in there.
Cool. Yeah, no, this is sun. So
yeah.
Well,
no sunlight. Yeah, I mean, there's so light, well, but no sunlight. Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, like a little thing like that would throw it off.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I probably didn't remember, Cantillon is, I mean, it's still old, but it's not like from antiquity. It's from 1900 or mm-hmm. 1910. That's when they started brewing. So not something that's been like, you know, we've went to breweries that were way older than that, you know. Give an example right now. Can't beers. And then, but their brew house is still like mostly the original equipment from the 1910s. Yeah. So there's one electric motor. So that was upgraded from probably steam powered or something, but it drives leather belts to shafts and everything else is belt driven.
And we're seeing that, so those pictures from, yeah.
So they replaced the power source with a modern power source. And by modern power source, I mean a motor that looks like it was made in the 50s. and yep. Everything else is original. The rakes for the mash tun, belt driven. Everything belt driven. It was crazy. Belt driven.
And the other thing that was crazy to me was
5.5.
The 5.
Number
5.
I had was wrong.
5.5. Okay. Well, that makes a huge difference, Greg. Yes.
Changes things entirely.
Changes everything. No. Going on that tour, and I don't know, did we talk about this on the other show?
Ask Greg if we talked about
it. Did we talk about how crazy that tour was? Because we were on a tour with the tour guide, but there were people doing a self-tour.
Yeah.
Also.
Just walking around. Okay. And it's a working brewery. They're actually doing
stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And there's these massive holes in the floor, mm-hmm. and there's no... Okay, we did talk about it, so I won't say anymore. All right.
We loved our trip. It was so good.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, we did.
You guys had a great time, clearly. I just don't want to, like, if you guys can all listen to the last episode, I don't want to just, like, repeat ourselves.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah.
No, yeah,
yeah,
I definitely don't
want to
repeat.
Don't
want to
repeat.
Yeah,
so.
Greg's not trying to be a jerk or anything by shutting us up. He's helping us not repeat ourselves.
Absolutely.
Oh, this beer is awesome. Mm. This is so good. This
I think
is so
we should
good.
Rank and we can savor this beer.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear to everybody what our number one beer is. So
I'm pretty sure that we're all on the same page with number one.
Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of what's left.
It's like, oh.
Honestly, of these beers, gonna put this guy in last place, the Noblesse Oblige.
Oh, really?
Because it was.
Really?
No, I guess I'll put the Westie in last place.
Well,
we got the Westie and the Petite Princesse.
Yeah, no, I know.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Okay. All right.
The Petite Princesse wasn't ruined. It was just.
You thought that one was ruined?
No, I thought the Westie was ruined.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Westie was ruined.
Yeah.
The Westie was, but I also struggled to rank it because, again, it was not what the brewer intended.
Sure.
But that
and
bottle.
We bought it on the black market, so.
Yeah. You know, I imagine Westie would have done high. I don't know if it would have beat the Cantillon. I honestly don't.
No.
But so in this, I don't know if I can even rank the Westie. I also don't know whether I can rank the Noblesse Oblige.
You have to rank them all.
Okay.
We've had a soft rule where if the beer is spoiled and it's not the beer that they made, then we don't have to rank it.
Yeah. So I'm not going to rank the Westie just because I don't think it's rankable. I don't think that was what was intended.
Mm-hmm. Especially since we bought it on the black market.
Yeah, but you know, for the, you know, but it was
a black market.
It's poured out. Like I couldn't finish it.
It was not a legitimate source to buy it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So the Noblesse Oblige would be next, I think, just because the skunk that was there. I think it would be better if it didn't have that skunk, but that skunk did affect it for me.
Okay.
Then the Petite Princesse, which was fine. It's just wasn't a lot, wasn't giving what I remembered and what I needed from the Petite Prince, which, you know, memory, who knows. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a lot there to hold on to. It's a beer to table. Have with food if you're going to get it. But also, like, I mean, it's hard to get. So, like, don't try to get it. Like, if you find it, great. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't pay a lot for it.
The bottle's too small. It needs to be in a big bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if this isn't a big bomber, then maybe you could say something about it. I'm gonna go with the Sons of Mosaic next, and then the Saint Bernardus, and then of course the Cantillon.
All right. My last place beer slash do not rank will be the Westie because, the fusel notes in that were rough. From there, I'm going to put the La Petite Princesse in, fifth place.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it smelled better than it tasted. It was just a little light on the body, but it was still a fine beer. You know, you'll notice that the Noblesse Oblige is going to be ranked higher because to me, the skunk didn't bother me. It was, if it was there, it was kind of enough to be appropriate. And I enjoyed the other things in that beer. So it's going to be a little bit higher. Let's see. So Westie, Petite Princesse, then let's do the Sons of Mosaic. Then I'll probably pull in the Noblesse Oblige. But I really liked what that beer gave me, that kind of beer de garde, saison, the intense noble hopping with the spiciness in there was sure something. And if there was light struck, it kind of was the right kind of light striking to work in that style for me, where some of the beers I had at Alberon, I wouldn't say that same thing. I would say they were light struck and not appropriate for the beer. Then I'll put St. Bernardus in second place and the Cantillon Guse in first place because it is a fucking masterpiece.
You and I are exactly... Yeah.
For the same reasons.
Our rankings are exactly the same for the same reasons. Yeah. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well,
I have the Mary Fuck Hills.
That's even more important as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Do you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So, interestingly enough, and I'm ashamed to say it because I said that I'm not an IPA person anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm Belgian. Person, but I still really like that Sons of Mosaic for an everyday beer. It's just something that I really enjoy. It I didn't write a lot of notes on it, but it ranked fourth. But I'd marry it. I'd drink it every day. I know we're not supposed to be ranking the
I think Fuck Mary Kill.
You can FMK. Okay.
You can throw in. Okay. I think in FMK you can throw in the bad one.
Yeah, I'm killing the Westie. Yeah,
deserves it.
I mean,
that was a crime.
Like I said, though, when we were there, I wasn't even that impressed.
Yeah.
Now I don't know how fresh that was either. I mean, we got it.
I love to try it at the brewery, right?
Weren't able to try it at the brewery. Yeah. We don't know how fresh those bottles were.
The one you taste at the Brewers Guild is as good as the best I've had.
Okay.
So that's as good as I expected to get.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm just not that impressed. Thinking back to that, I would still kill it. And then I would definitely fuck the candy on. Because I don't want to have that every day. I don't want to get tired of it. I want to enjoy that here and there. Okay. And yeah, that I love that Guse.
I want the Cantillon to be my theme music. I want this to be my companion for life. I'm marrying the Who's absolutely 100% marrying the Cantillon.
Yeah, that's
there's
fair.
No question.
That's fair.
I will kiss its feet. I'll do whatever it wants
until you get tired of it.
I don't think I'll get tired. Look.
But I've never gotten tired. I haven't gotten tired of this man right here. So
you know, like there are times when you're like you see something on TV, and you're like, looks good, but that doesn't mean that you're like you're gonna get tired of this. No. That's
winning the lottery right there.
It's like, okay, I grew up in Florida and everybody's like, oh my God, why would you ever talk bad about Florida? Why would you? Well, you take for granted the things that you're surrounded by all the time, you know? Now, I wasn't surrounded by the beach, but as a teenager, as a young adult, I was at the beach all the time. Literally all the time. Mm-hmm. So I took it for granted, you know, and now I live here and I take the mountains and, you know, I tend to take that. We tend to take for granted what
we see or we are exposed to or we are with every day. We should not move to Brussels.
You don't want to take it for granted.
I don't want to take it for it's like going to New England and moving to New England. I mean, you know, when we went on that trip, I wanted to move, but then it was like, but I don't want to lose that beauty that
trying to talk Greg out of marrying it.
I'm not trying to talk you out of marrying it. I just want you to remember
it would be my honor and privilege to take this Hughes for granted.
But you shouldn't take it.
If I got tired of this, that would be a fucking like sin. Privilege.
It would be a sin. It would be a crime.
No, that would be a privilege.
And then you would divorce it. And then what? You'd never have it again.
Producers are playing us off.
We don't know. But no, we don't know what Greg's going to kill.
I haven't even.
I know. Wrap it up.
Well, no, I'm killing the Westie, obviously.
Yeah, the Westie.
And the fuck. Yeah, the St. Bernardus. Yeah, I'll get a pity fuck.
All right. I will kill the Westie. I will. They're not going to like this, but I'm going to marry and fuck the Canteon because nothing else
you're
is.
You're not allowed to marry and fuck the same thing.
Nothing else is in the ballpark.
You're not allowed to marry and No. You haven't. I remember wanting to do that once and you didn't let me.
Okay, fine. I'm going to marry the Canteon and I'm going to fuck the.
Rules may be made to be broken, but not today.
The Nobly Subliege. Hey. I'm going to fuck that one.
You smell like skunk afterwards.
I know. Thanks, everyone. This is another Aussie Crawl. This is the one Greg played in his band, so...